folks here, let's call the meeting to order. Thank you.
It is 3:03 and February 8th. And call the meeting of the House Committee to order.
Committee Secretary will distribute to interested parties a CS for House Bill 361, which will be the funding vehicle for education. This is not scheduled until this coming Monday, but I did want to make the information available for those that might be interested. And so these, pardon me, I'm still at the top. These are available to committee members and interested parties.
Bring me one.
On schedule today is implementing Alaska 2000 recommendations, HB 84, HB 359, appropriation construction upgrade on base schools, HJR 47, funds to upgrade military base schools, and HB 391 has been pulled from the calendar at the sponsor's request. And Laura Lee, if you'd like to call the roll.
Representative Tui?
Here.
Representative Bundy?
Here.
Representative Gary Davis?
Here.
Representative Measy?
Here.
Representative Cott? Representative Olberg?
Here.
Representative Ben Davis?
Here.
Representative Nikolai?
Here.
Representative Bryce?
We have a quorum present, and to accommodate some of our visitors, we will begin with HB 359 and we are now open for public testimony. Representative Mulder, are you running this dog and pony show?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, we'll just do the introduction, basically. Thank you, Mr. and Madam Chairman, for allowing me the opportunity to be here today, as well as the other members of the committee. As many of you are aware, last session we created a task force based upon the recommendations from General Ralston, which would address the problem of on-base military schools. The problem is complex, and it's doubly troubling for an individual like me, a representative like me, because it not only affects the students that I represent in terms of my base, but it also, the issue of on-base schools affects the security of continued existence of those bases in Alaska, as it's an integral part of the evaluation process that the Base Realignment and Closure Commission evaluates in their overall recommendation for closure of bases. They closely evaluate how up to grade those schools are and what, if any, funds are necessary to improve them and what kind of commitment local communities have made to their schools. Through the course of the interim, the task force met, and before you is the product of their work, enclosed within HJR 47 and HB 359. And rather than differentiate or distinguish right now, in short form, HJR 47 is a resolution calling for or requesting that we work cooperatively and as expeditiously as possible to transfer these schools and bring them over to the local school districts. And HB 359 is the appropriation bill, which funds $26 million, or half of the upgrades necessary. The problem, Captain Porter will talk about, is tied to the fact that while school districts and local communities may want to invest money and help these facilities, there's no funding mechanism available in the sense that they are not allowed to bond for these schools because they don't own these schools. And as General Ralston will tell you, I mean, it's made even more complex because of the various number of federal entities that are involved in the oversight of these facilities. So it's in everyone's interest that we transfer these schools as early and quickly as possible to bring them up. But to do that, we need to bring them up to speed because no local community or school district will want to take these schools over, and the obligation, financial obligation, except that those schools are up to speed. So the recommendation put out by the task force was that we basically leverage the federal government against the state government in terms of funding, recommending that both sides come up with half of the appropriation and thereby cooperatively fund the improvements necessary to these schools, nine of which remain on the list and located in Anchorage and Fairbanks. So at this time, rather than talk about it myself, I thought I'd have Captain Dennis Porter talk more specifically as the legislative liaison to the task force about the task force and our work.
Thank you, Representative Mulder. Ladies and gentlemen, this afternoon I'd like to show you a few slides that I have and get a little specific with you on actual topics and try to paint a picture for what we have. If I, as a speaker, may be permitted to have a goal for this afternoon, I'd like to express my passion for this problem. I've been working closely with it for the past year. I have gone and visited each and every one of these schools, I think I can share with you my confidence in a very hopeful, positive solution. To start with, I'd like to express a little bit about the background. The buildings are owned by the U.S. Department of Education. They rest on land owned by the Department of Defense, and the construction is a responsibility of the local school district. With this arrangement comes inherent problems. Specifically, who makes the repairs? Now, over the years, there's been a natural deterioration between these entities, and that has resulted in little or no funding ready for maintenance or upgrades of our schools. More specifically on the repair issue, there's a $25,000 cap at the local level. Each school district is not supposed to spend more than $25,000 for these schools per year. Over that is basically the responsibility of the state. And when I say responsibility, the local school district can ask, well, coffers and dollars sometimes that is not available. Major maintenance issues that are also the responsibility of the U.S. Department of Education. The U.S. DOD is prohibited by law from actually spending any of our operation and maintenance dollars on this. Bottom line is there are little or no funds available for our schools. I apologize for the tilt of the slid over the transfer here. History, each of these schools was built between 1952 and 1960. The local school districts were reluctant to take transfer of these schools until they were brought up to the necessary life, health, and safety codes of the other comparable schools in their district. Therefore, if they took them on early, it would put out an undue burden on the local school district and on the local tax-based community. In 1990, a meeting was chaired by Lieutenant General Mackner. To that meeting, we had several representatives from all the different entities involved, including the U.S. Department of Education, the State Department of Education, Board of Education, local military representatives from all of the school districts, and local and interested community members. There's originally 15 to 17 schools on the list. Two of the schools were taken care of so fast that they never actually showed up on the report list, but the USDOE did fund some money to help them. We are now down to 9 schools. It's actually 10 schools still remaining, but the answer for two of those schools was to combine it and replace it with one new. So we have 9 schools that we are looking to help. A little more on the history here. The schools that were upgraded by the USDOE were the schools that we actually did transfer after an upgrade, which was at Kodiak, Fort Greeley, and Fort Richardson, most recently. There was a joint venture between the Department of Defense and the state of Alaska. Senator Stevens sponsored a bill that basically paid for one school up at Eielson, while the state of Alaska paid for another school, not at Eielson, Fort Greeley. There was also a mission change at ADAC, which made it go unaccompanied. Last military defendants will leave their list off. There are 9 remaining schools. There's a new elementary school to replace Taylor Pinnell at Eielson Air Force Base. There are several at Elmendorf 4, and there are also some at Fort Richardson. Ben Eielson is the only junior-senior high involved. All the others are elementary-based schools. Interesting to point out here for Ben Eielson junior-senior high, that almost 50% of the kids that go there come from off-base. So this isn't just impacting base school population, but the vast majority of our students that go there are from the military. It's a list of Mount Eliana is a preschool. That's for handicapped kids. Special needs folks that go there. And, we also have some problems with that. A little bit on the dollars and cents of this. What you see here is what was provided by the Anchorage School District for the schools involved in the Anchorage Bowl. The original there states a 1990 estimate. At that meeting I talked about earlier, chaired by Lieutenant General McNerney, he, through the group there, was able to get a list of how much it was expected to cost to transfer these schools over local school districts. Well, funding has been slow, although we have had some progress. What you can see on the revised is an estimate of $1,994, with each one of them going up over $1 million each, bringing the total just for the Anchorage Bowl area to a little over $27 million. Fairbanks North Star Rural School District also had an increase. The new elementary building was actually funded in 91-92 by the USDOE. It was thought at that time that those two schools could be upgraded for $3.9 million. Unfortunately, further deterioration and inflation, coupled with other problems of the school, has made it more cost-effective for them to ask for a total replacement. They went back to the USDOE and asked them for more money. They said they did not have any more at this time, but they were welcome to use the $3.9 million as a basis to start the new school, even though it wasn't going into the two buildings that they thought it was going to go into. They went in for the same purpose of those kids attending. That brings our total deficit that we are looking and forecasting right here to a little over $52 million. Major causes for the increase, the significant factors outside inflation and deterioration, are the Americans with Disabilities Act compliance. That says it will be handicapped access for any public building, including schools. Also in that increase was the per space per child. It's approximately 500 square feet per child up to 750, which is also by far and away the biggest increase that we've had has been the fire and health and life safety codes that we've had to keep up with for all of these schools, including these here. Up north, the same thing. To this end, there was a task force created by your state legislature last year, chaired by Representative Elton Bolden. We also have strong leadership from Senator Lehman, Representative James, Representative Martin, other members of this. Like the 1990 meeting, were representatives from both the school districts, the State Department, the Board of Education, the governor's office had an appointee, the military was represented, as well as concerned parents. The proposed solution and recommendation is they helped quantify the $1,994 that I just showed you, as well as they came up with a proposal. The state would match dollar for dollar those funds provided by any source in the federal government. And then we would transfer the ownership as soon as the funds were obligated.
Representative Tui has a question.
I just have a question. Not being a banker of any kind or having my checkbook, will you be able to realize any saving or any tax deferral or any tax when you transfer these schools?
What happens when we transfer the schools, the reason we're trying to hope for is that right now, because of state statute, they cannot bond for those schools. So we can't raise money at any local level and we can't pay for it by the DOD. By transferring the schools sooner, even up in Anchorage, you get two construction summers, in fact, basically 2 years sooner to help with the local funding of the issue. And as a matter of fact, the USDOE has made it mandatory for them to give the money, they will transfer as soon as the money is made available. So that's already taken place with Thurston Major. Please feel free to interrupt anytime. The marketing approach that we have chosen to employ here to help us out is we will utilize a cohesive, united approach from our task force. Each member of the task force went away with it. We had a united vote going away that this will hopefully solve our problems and at least give a hopeful solution. We thought it is very important to increase the awareness and the interest at all levels. We want to involve the parents at all the schools, basically through volunteerism. General Ralston last year authorized a review of this health and safety of the playground issue. Through numerous problems that were identified there, We were able to come up and identify specific tasks that could be helped by small groups of parents. And the Parent Efficacy Committee has taken on those as something that they feel that they can contribute to help. So wherever we can, we are trying to get a solution. Where does that leave us for an outlook? I believe it's possible to look at this in three distinct manners. I think it's unrealistic for us to think that we are going to get $26 million from the federal government or from the state this fiscal year. Nor do I pretend that that's statistic. However, I am optimistic that we can get upwards of $10 million from the federal government this year, partially through the Department of Defense bill that was sponsored by our senator, Senator Stevens, where he put money into the defense budget at the public law level. I've already told you we can't spend DOD money well unless they rewrite the laws. And that money is hopefully going to come our way. So let me point out that $10 million was for the whole United States problem. We're going to have to fight for what we can to get out of it for Alaska. And I'm also hopeful we can get some from the U.S. Department of Education. They have come through in the past years, not as fast as I would like to see with the deterioration in inflation problems, but they have come through. Reality, however, is maybe something less than that. But also a part of reality is a picture here. And this is fairly typical of what we have. Some of you may have seen these. This picture is Aurora Elementary School. What it shows here is the roof structure that a roof structure that was deemed by the engineering firm saying anything over 2 inches could collapse the roof. So I got a phone call on Thursday, and by Monday they were ready to go to school again. But over the weekend they had put in over 70 of these support structures. These are 6x6 beams. It were put out throughout the buildings, and as you can see there, it clearly impacts how we actually give care of instruction in the classroom. The photographer, I just asked him to sit down in any chair in there and take a look at it from behind. You can't see the chalkboard. Ladies and gentlemen, these kids, they really think that they are, you know, in Alaska. They like to think they're Alaskans, and if you look down there on the little right-hand side, a little boy wearing an Alaskan shirt, he truly believes that he's in Alaska, and he looks forward to helping out. We have a problem that's growing larger every day, and I solicit your support, urge your help for what we can. We're certainly not here to try to tell you how to do your business, but we certainly will work with you in any way possible.
Thank you. Questions for Captain Porter?
I have one question.
Yes, Representative Betty Davis.
Ursa Major is not on here. Is that the school that was just recently turned over?
Yes, ma'am. $4.9
million. Where did the money come from?
U.S. Department of Education.
Oh, great. Okay. So the upgrades have been done? And
no, ma'am. The upgrades will happen over the next several years. Part of what they had to do was comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act. That is a two-story structure, so we actually have to put in an elevator in an elementary school for handicapped accessibility upstairs.
So there's actually enough money to do that without an in-state match?
That one's taken care of.
For that one, okay.
Along with Fort Greeley and Kodiak, those were all taken care of.
We have with us Dwayne Guiley also to testify on excuse me, JR and HB 359.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Dwayne Guiley, Department of Education in Juneau. The Department of Education would like to compliment the Military Schools Task Force on their effort and support HJR 47 in that the resolution continues to bring to the forefront the problem associated with the transfer of the military schools and the cost of doing so. The department, however, does not support the appropriation bill, HB 359, in that the appropriation bill calls for a direct appropriation of 50% of state share matched with 50% federal share for projects, most of which have not been evaluated by the department nor ranked in the school construction priority process. The highest priority project of the Military Schools Task Force is a replacement for Taylor and Pinnell Elementary Schools on Eielson, and that project has been applied for by the district. This body gave to that district last year $600,000 for a planning grant. They have done their planning. They have this year applied for a capital project construction grant. That project has been evaluated and ranked on a relative basis compared to the statewide need as number 33 on our school construction list. Based on our current list, it would take an appropriation of $241 million to fund the school construction needs ahead of Eielson Elementary School, ranked in priority order. So therefore, the department does not support the appropriation bill as it is currently written and would ask that the projects be submitted through the normal capital projects process, as the Fairbanks North Star Borough has already done. They have requested planning grants for the remaining two projects in 1996 and construction grants in 97. So they are attempting to take care of the problem through the priority system that exists for school construction needs statewide. The projects on the Anchorage basis have not been applied for and not been evaluated by the department. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Toohey and then Representative
Davis. I have a question probably for both of you. And if the possibility exists, and it does, the rumors out there that eventually Fort Rich will close, what will the status of those schools be once it closes, when and if it closes?
Well, we can go on the basis of what's happening down at ADAC. They would be turned over to the state, and or first thing that happens is it's turned over to the local military that's there, and if they no longer need them, then it would be turned over to the best usage for them. Because of the capacity that is arising, the problems of capacity arising in the local school district of Anchorage, I would suggest that we still need to utilize those schools and could probably utilize them by shipping some kids out there by bus, which is not that far away.
Thanks. Representative Gary Davis, then Representative Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Guiley, you indicated that your process apparently involves some planning grants to the North Star Borough so they could do some planning for possible renovation of these schools or check into the validity of numbers that have been presented here today?
Through the chair, Representative Davis, the North Star Borough School District has probably one of the best six-year capital improvement project planning processes in place in schools today. They typically request a planning grant whereby they produce the ed specs, the schematic design, they select the site, they do the site investigation, and then based upon the site selected, they choose one of their prototypical type designs, and then they submit a construction grant for that prototypical type design. They followed that same process with the replacement for the Taylor and Pinnell Elementary Schools. Last year, the legislature granted them a planning grant for that replacement school, and this year they're back on our list for the construction grant to replace that facility with a prototypical type elementary school.
Okay, I guess so the where I'm getting from is that it appears that there's been a lot of planning done here, but this so it doesn't relate at all. I just don't want any planning grants that's going to duplicate some of this stuff here, but apparently they're two different.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Davis, the initial planning, as Captain Porter mentioned, was related to the upgrade of Taylor and Pinnell. The district, in reviewing the needs of Taylor and Pinnell, determined that it would be in their best interest to build a new facility as opposed to attempt to upgrade the two existing facilities. Thereby, they could relinquish their control of the two existing facilities and turn them back to the federal government. The title is vested with USDOE. The state has no interest in those buildings. The state has no interest in the land under the buildings, and the two buildings could actually be demolished after the building of the new school.
Representative Cott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not so sure this is directed toward Mr. Guiley or not, but I think perhaps the General or Captain Porter could respond. I think as we pare down the military around the United States, and a lot of rumors are spreading throughout Alaska as to various potential cuts, can you basically, in a nutshell, kind of convey to this panel here of astute individuals how important schools are as a variable in that decision-making process?
Chairman, if I
please.
In the
Austin, have a seat for our microphone and just identify yourself for the record, would you please?
Yes, Lieutenant General Joe Ralston. I'm Commander of Alaskan Command. The Base Realignment and Closure Commission evaluates a broad range of aspects when they make their decisions on the base closures. They look at the location of the base, they look at training areas, they look at housing, and they look at schools, among other factors. As we all know, every base within the Department of Defense will be looked at for this next round of closures in FY 95, fiscal year 95. I don't want to be overly pessimistic or overly optimistic on this because it's an independent commission and I can't forecast what they will do. But I can tell you that they will look very carefully at the schools on the basis that will be evaluated. And if they see schools that have roofs that are about to collapse and those types of things, that has a bearing when they compare that base versus another base that perhaps has better schools on it. So while that may not be a the only factor, certainly is not the only factor that's looked at, it is one that is important.
Representative Betty Davis.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Golly, you were referring to what was happening in Fairbanks about the two schools that was condemned, and now you're going to build a new school. I see that as a different situation than what we have with these buildings that's existing, and I think that it's unfair that we would even want to put them in the same category, because the only reason you are able to build a new school is no longer is that federal school that would be a school for the local school district. Is that not right?
Yes.
It's going to be a local school district school.
Yes.
To the and so therefore, they would have to follow the guidelines that have been drawn up for you. At the present time, those schools are not local school district, even though we have children going to school there. They still belong to DOD. They will not be turned over to the local school districts until they are brought up to upgrade codes so that the school districts can then take them over as their schools. And even at that point, you know, then you could say, well, these are the guidelines that you have to go by. But to say that they have to meet those guidelines, who's to prepare that? Who's to do it? They're not our schools. They're not the local, I'm saying they're not the state. They used to be state-operated schools. They're no longer that. They are DOD's property. We've been going through this process since 1984, at least, trying to get the monies to turn those schools over to the local school districts. And so far, it has not come. You got the one school that we got at Fort Richardson, but that's all. All those other schools are still there. And even if the military abandoned those things tomorrow, and those children are not going to those schools, those buildings still need to be brought up to code, because at some point when the military leave, what is happening, the local governments and private entities are taking them over to use those buildings for other projects so that they could be used, because it might be children that would live in those houses and those schools would still be needed and they have to be upgraded. So I don't think it's fair for us to say that they should have to follow the same guidelines because they are not in the district.
Mr. Guyless.
Through the Chair, Representative Davis, my reference to the guidelines, of course, we're referring to the capital projects funding process that we do have in existence for schools statewide. In reference to these specific facilities, it's the choice of the local school district whether or not they take title to these buildings. The only way the federal government will provide more money for these buildings, based on their current indication to us, is if the district agrees to take title. The $3.9 million that was made available from the federal government for Taylor and Pinnell was made available on the condition that the school district take title to those buildings. The district initially refused that money because they didn't want the buildings. They went back to the federal government and said, we don't want the buildings. We want a new building such as what we received at Fort Wainwright, and they wanted to do a similar process there where they demolished two existing buildings and replaced with one new, mm-hmm. in that they would much rather own a new facility. So at the present time, that $3.9 million is held in limbo, if you will, waiting for either additional funding or for the district to change their stance and actually upgrade those two existing facilities and take title. The $4.3 million that was made available in Anchorage for Ursa Major is, again, the same situation. The district must take title to the building, and they have agreed to do so. However, they cannot take title to the land. The land will be on a use permit as it currently is. In Fairbanks' case, the district negotiated a 75-year use permit under the new school that was built. They were able in Fairbanks to actually stop using Aurora Elementary and Wainwright Elementary when they built Ladd Elementary. They demolished those two buildings in 92, and Department of Defense provided money for a second school there called Arctic Light, and now they're able to no longer use Chena and Birch Elementary schools. They're still using one of those schools as a pilot, an overflow middle school, in that they have overcrowding at a school located off base. But again, in the case of Birch and Chena, Fairbanks does not own those buildings today and has no desire to own those buildings. And based on this current plan, they never will. The same thing applies in Anchorage. Anchorage is being somewhat more flexible in taking the older buildings. But again, the condition is that they must take title if they want more federal money.
Okay, could I follow through on that further, Mr. Chair?
All right. Just,
what would satisfy Department of Education? You say you do not accept the proposal that's in front of you because you have not met the guidelines. What would have to take place in order for you to...
What we suggested in the position paper we wrote on the bill was simply that the projects be applied for and be evaluated and be placed on the prioritized list and recognized on a statewide basis for the relative need of those schools versus the need of students statewide. As you're aware, our current list this year totals approximately $660 million of school construction statewide, and that's just the first year of a six-year plan. If we total the six-year plan, it's over $2 billion of outstanding unfunded capital improvement project requests that are out there today for students statewide. And all we're asking is that the applications be developed for these schools. They have been developed for the three schools in Fairbanks. The first one that was requested for funding in FY95 was the replacement for Eielson Elementary. It has been evaluated and ranked on a relative basis. It's number 33 on our list. The other schools have not been evaluated because funding was not requested this year. But they do have a plan in place, and we're asking that the plan be applied to these other schools as well.
If we were to follow that procedure, those schools could be on the list forever. The only reason that we were able to make the priorities that we did make last year is because there was a special appropriation given to that. But to follow the guidelines that you have, unless it was life safety issues, the rest of them could be on there forever. And this is a different situation altogether, and that's why I say it's not reasonable to expect that they would follow the same procedure, because if the federal government is willing to give money and we can't come up with a match, that means that we would not be able to appropriate the money to turn the schools over to the district. And I don't think it's unreasonable for the local district to say they want those schools to be brought up to code before they take them over, because otherwise it would never happen. And so it has to be a special consideration.
Might I move on to Representative Toohey?
No. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
As long as we have the representatives of the Air Force here, ask the specific questions to them. It is not my intention to move the bill out today, either one of them. So if let's use the resource while they're here. If we have no further questions for the representatives of the Air Force, let's keep them.
Questions?
Representative Beasy.
To whomever would like to answer, Captain, I assume that you've worked on this personally, but how would you compare the standards that we have in Alaska to the standards that you would expect nationwide?
Chairman, Representative Vessia.
Once again, it's Captain Porter. I tried to help the Secretary out.
There are a number of these schools throughout the United States. Our schools probably fare somewhere in the middle range of this. However, I can only take a look at Anchorage School District. And if you were to rank, the majority of the schools that we're talking about are in their Anchorage Bowl area. And if you take a look at what they've done, they had a HSI study a few years ago, 92, I believe it was. And they took a look at all the schools, and all of our schools rank in their top 10 worst schools that they have. And I think that makes a statement in itself if you only apply that. And they have the most schools of any school district in the state of Alaska, 72 or so, 55 of them being elementary. So there's that's about the only way I can gauge it, being unfamiliar with the rest of the United States. But that gives us clear indication that we're going down the wrong way. These schools are eventually going to be hurt pretty bad.
Virtually all these schools we're discussing, Eielson, Elmendorf, Fort Riggs, they're all built early 50s, late 50s.
1952 to 1960, sir.
The schools that we're comparing them with in Anchorage are all built 60s and mostly in the late 70s and beyond. I mean,
that's correct. Most of them are not as old as these here are. But they've also had a lot more normal maintenance and programmed upgrades. And I think over the years, that's where we have lost out on majority-wise.
Okay, And just in my head, mentally going through the school inventory, the majority of the schools in the state that are more than 30 years old are in this group that we're talking about on these bases. I guess you probably aren't prepared to answer that, because mentally going through it, I can think of very few schools in the state that are more than 30 years old, and most of them that I come to my mind are on the bases.
Through the chair, Representative Vesey. Yes, sir, there's the number of schools that were this age is less than 10% of the schools that are in the state of Alaska. Through that information, we gathered at the task force level to find out exactly where we sit in. Again, I'm not so worried about the age of the school as I am the programmed maintenance and upgrades that we've had over the years. And there's just been a serious lack there for those schools.
And a lot of those program upgrades and whatnot is due to the fact that the legislature has adopted new building standards, which makes these older buildings obsolete.
Through the chair, Representative Vesey. Yes, sir. There is a number of statutes that have come up, but the main problem has gone back to who's responsible for it. There is no capital improvement plan for our schools because they don't own them. They cannot be bonded for by the local areas, therefore we can't spend the money. So when you ask us to put together a capital improvement plan, Representative Davis's comments are very poignant, because the local area, not only can they not do the paperwork to do it, but they cannot ask the local taxpayers to pay for it. So it becomes a paper push, and they need to concentrate on where they feel they can get money at the time.
Thank you. All questions.
Representative Tuohy.
Unique, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is this unique through the United States, that this kind of snafu?
It is not unique through the United States. The actual number is fairly difficult to find, because the only people that we can gather this information from, ma'am, is the Department of Education. The closest thing that we've been able to go back to is the Dole report in 86-87 time frame, which was created by Senator Dole, and he said that he was taking care of Kansas first. Once Kansas got taken care of, there seemed to be a lack of interest once it got passed there. I'm sure he has good intentions to follow through.
Next on the list.
And we are number two on the list, therefore pushing our way up to number one. So there are other ones, but not to the magnitude that we have.
Representative Gary Davis. I just can't help but comment on, you know, I appreciate the work that's been done, and I'm sure you believe in everything that's included here and the urgency of the situation. Probably everyone in the state, every new legislator, came to the legislature with the same feeling about their school district as did I. Why hasn't my district been given this priority? There are such needs here. And I think you can understand our situation by having your needs indicated as number 33 on the state's list. But we're all facing that, and I just had to get some feeling of the crisis situation in the state relating to educational facilities. It's getting worse by the day.
Representative Mulder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it's fine, Dennis. I think, you know, not only contrast, I appreciate what the Commissioner of Education, his position isn't in the ranking process, but this one isn't exactly a normal duck. It's kind of unique in that the people who want to take it over don't feel they should take it over until it's brought up to speed, and there's no funding mechanism in place to really be able to take care of it. So it's a unique problem in terms of funding. But beyond that, there are the political ramifications of this whole decision and this whole process, which in my mind are very, very strong and very present. And they're unlike any other school district throughout the state. There are other states in this country and communities which are undertaking the financial responsibility of fully, within themselves, funding upgrades, funding programs, funding housing programs to maintain their military establishments and their bases within their communities, because they realize how important, as an economy, those bases are to the state and to the community. And what we proposed here in the resolution and the bill was that we cooperatively work. We realize it's a tough financial time. We don't expect that we can probably get the whole bite at one time. But due to the political situation, due to the unique financial situation, we felt it was it was imperative that we take a strong step and we take some action to try and help ourselves and maintain these bases.
Other questions for our panel? We obviously will spend some more time discussing this. We thank you for your presentation, your time. We'll take a brief at ease so that you can gather your equipment, and we won't keep you from your appointed round.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Back on record, we will reconvene here at 3:45, and please, if the record will reflect that Representative Cott did join us at 3:04. We are now have before us House Bill 84 as amended, though those many times, and we'll offer further amendments. Representative Gary Davis has amendments. We have some folks to testify. Before we begin the amendments, perhaps we could hear the testimony, and then we will begin to look at amendments. Public testimony is now open, and Claudia Douglas, would you join us, please?
Thank you. Thank you. My name is Claudia Douglas, and I'm president of NEA Alaska. Chairman Bundy and members of the committee, I appreciate this opportunity to make some points about. I have the committee substitute for House Bill 84, and the number I have at the top is, I guess, you.
Working draft.
Thank you. Some have come to believe that tenure is synonymous with lifetime employment. Nothing could be further from the truth. Competent and effective administrators with leadership and motivational skills have utilized tenure as an ally to develop innovative and challenging teaching staffs. How? While tenure protects the freedom of the academic community needs to impart knowledge and critical thinking skills to children, tenure protects schools from becoming systems where the spoils of bureaucracy are placed and practiced. Over 20 years ago, Alaska joined the mainstream of America by extending tenure to its teachers. Today, tenure continues to accomplish its purpose by encouraging effective teaching in the various political climates existing in any school district during a person's career. But at the same time, teachers have been dismissed and non-renewed for incompetence, immorality, and failure to comply with the rules and regulations of school systems. Administrators are necessary to the success of the process because they are trained to evaluate and develop teachers to accomplish the educational goals and plans of a school district. Administration is a demanding job. Those who enter educational management understand that many variables will attack their time. Good administration understands the need to develop skills of the staff as the profession changes. They have the authority to coordinate resources such as money, other teachers, and the instructional day to develop staff. Although administrators are critical to the staff development and evaluation process, we continue to hear of career teachers who have never been evaluated. We hear of the first-year teacher who on his or her first day is given a set of keys to his or her classroom, attends a staff meeting, but never sees that principal in the classroom again for the rest of the year. We hear of teachers who ask for help from administrators and, unfortunately, give them no time and no attention. In cases like these, weakening tenure will not help administrators do better jobs. Also, creating tenure review committees cannot do this because of lack of money, authority, time, and staff needed to ensure the successful staff development and evaluation program. Schools are burdened already with too many mandates from the local, state, and federal levels. Both teachers and administrators are expected to do more, but are allocated nothing to accomplish the expectations. Instead of working with school districts to help them restructure the time and job assignment of administrators to allow them to become instructional leaders, to develop staff and implement evaluation programs, we believe that the HESS committee has before it another proposal to create a new bureaucracy to complicate the evaluation process and a system for achieving tenure. NEA Alaska is concerned that making the evaluation process more cumbersome by creating tenure review committees will simply dilute time and personnel already critically stretched. Removing teachers from already overcrowded classrooms to serve on tenure review committees will be expensive and will simply add to overcrowding and impact quality instruction. The allocation of time to tenure review will be costly. Will school districts be expected to fund the costs associated with release time, staff development programs that are going to be demanded by the tenure review committees, meetings, in-service training, and so forth? A two-year tenure system will also be confusing and divisive since teachers will be divided into one system or the other. Litigation can be expected. Will premiums to insure districts in the event of litigation by teachers against the districts go up? The problem is not tenure. Furthermore, the public doesn't believe tenure is a problem either if we believe the results gathered last year by the Department of Education. The public's concern for tenure falls below their concern for early childhood development, class size reduction, providing opportunities for at-risk children, technology training, and vocational programs, and many more. Professionally and publicly, tenure, we emphasize, is not the problem. If we are to restructure school systems to empower teachers to prepare all children for the demands of an ever-changing economy, three areas must be addressed. First, the system used to prepare teachers for the classroom must be improved. Second, the process used to select teachers for employment should be reviewed. And third, the process and procedures used to evaluate and develop teachers must happen and must become a vehicle to empower teachers for the challenging opportunities that are before us. Failure to address these critical areas will simply miss the mark of providing substantive change designed to ensure that the children of Alaska are taught by the very best. NE Alaska opposes CSHB 84 because it simply will create two tenure systems and does nothing to ensure that the administrators are provided the time to do the demanding jobs that they are hired to do, to be instructional leaders that Alaska will need to meet the demands of a new century. And I have copies of my testimony for you. I realize that my comments are more directed toward the whole idea of tenure and what tenure means in the state. And I have a lot of questions about the bill in particular, but I'd like to hear some of what the amendments are, and then maybe submit to the committee the questions that we'd have concerning those amendments, if that's sure. Right with the committee members.
I appreciate the written testimony, and would you see that the secretary gets a copy
certainly.
Of it as well?
Certainly. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Are there questions for Ms. Douglas at this point? Again, I understand that I'm viewing this as a working document, and we will be doing the best we can to end up with a product that will serve Alaska's teachers the very best that we know how. Representative Gary Davis, is that a question I see?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Claudia, for your testimony. Very, very informative and a lot of good information in there. One thing it didn't address that I didn't hear was public perception of tenure, which I think is what most of us are dealing with to a large degree. I think you addressed it. My feeling is you addressed it in talking about federal mandates and all the requirements and title programs and all the additional work that's been put on teachers and administrators. I feel that addresses it, and I guess that's the question. Do you think that's why the common citizen out there and parent doesn't have a grasp of all of that that's come down, so all they can hit is tenure? Is that, do you feel that's a valid perception?
Yeah, and, you know, I say this with trying to be as candid as I can. All of us know of people in almost every profession that give the profession a bad name. And I guess that, you know, when parents or any parent has a teacher that is with their child that has not been met the best, you know, their expectations of the very best, that puts a sour taste in the mouth of that person and a feeling about the whole tenure system. You know, in terms of, and I think that you're right. I think that a lot of times the public doesn't realize the demands of the classroom, the demands of the school, of the administration. And I think that the one area that they can attack is to say, you know, we had a bad experience with this teacher. But when you think about in Alaska, we have something like 10,000 certificated teachers in the state. When I attended the public testimony and hearings on Alaska 2000, where tenure was one of the issues, there were very few public responses and testimony about trying to change tenure. So, you know, and I know that probably all of you have had calls about trying to change tenure and that it doesn't work. What I think it has gotten a bad name for is to say that it protects bad teachers and hasn't looked that it has protected good teachers as well. And I think that that's oftentimes, maybe those teachers that have been the very best in a child's life would have possibly been fired if we didn't have tenure. And I just think there's misunderstanding about it.
If I might, and you and I have had conversations, but just for the record, I would like it to reflect that I am a very strong supporter of tenure. I believe that it is vital to continued excellence in teaching. However, I also hear from the people that you mentioned that have had less than satisfactory experience and are frustrated and feel some need for change or input. One of the most consistent responses I get from teachers is that the system is working, and I have to submit that if it was working, we wouldn't be hearing from these people. Admittedly, the very small minority of people who have been frustrated with teachers who are doing a poor job. Unfortunately, human nature is people that do a good job don't seem to get noticed, and the bad ones stand out, and that's unfortunate. And my motivation is trying to protect and reward those people who are continuing to do a good job. I think teachers are caught in a double whammy because people in general want us to reduce state employees, teachers mm-hmm. being state employees, people who are threatened, excuse me, on many levels, economically, are looking at someone else and saying, the grass is greener over there, don't get me, get them. You know, cut the other fellow and pass the savings on to me. I think, and I hope we can all agree that we want to strengthen the process. We don't want to eliminate it. And those are certainly my goals. Questions for our other comments for Claudia? We certainly invite you to stay with us for additional input. I would like to acknowledge that Terry Kramer is with us. Terry? There you are. And she's from Legislative Legal. And if we get into some definitions and discussions of legal terminology, she'll be here to give us a hand. So keep that in mind as a resource that's available to us. Carl Rose is also signed up to testify. we'll get to the amendments.
Are they handed out?
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. And now that the fog and everything is past, I'm glad to be with you. I would like to share some comments with you, and I'm glad we're maybe not as structured as maybe we would be in a real hearing session, because I have some perceptions that I'd like to share with you also, and it seems like the longer I'm involved with the legislature and in educational issues, the more confused people become, namely myself. I've been involved in school-level governance for 19 years, since I was first elected to the school board, and I was somewhat surprised when I read the last edition of the Juno report that suggested that some strides could have been made in teacher tenure if it weren't for the School Board Association getting involved last session, which shocked me, because that's never been our position. We've always been critical of tenure, and we've always pushed for change. But to be the suggestion that we were the reason that change didn't take place just really didn't sit well with me. And so I'd like to visit with you just briefly about some of the things that are contained in the bill. And they may be a little more philosophical than we've ever been involved in before, but I think it's important that we recognize them. First of all, Alaska 2000, under whatever committee substitute for House Bill 84 that we're dealing with, I don't know how appropriate the legislation is towards Alaska 2000, but some elements of the legislation currently under consideration we're very concerned with. But when I say the appropriateness of Alaska 2000 under HB 84, I think in terms of issues contained in the actual structure of the delivery system in education, I think in terms of the governance of how we govern our system at a state and local level and who's responsible for what. And then lastly, what about our future and the funding of education into the future? These are things that are systemic that we have to examine, and to date I don't see anyone doing that yet. I mean, we have to look at where we're going for the benefit of our children, how we're going to get there, what kinds of things need to be changed, and how we sustain an adequate level of funding into the future. So these things aren't in this bill, but I'd like them to be part of the discussion sometime into the future because it's very relevant. Secondly, as we talk about the latest committee substitute that I've only heard rumored, and that is some changes that have been made regarding the PTA and their involvement. I'm concerned about that. I'm somewhat disappointed that that the PTA and Sue Hall suggested that they really didn't want to be involved in the bill in the manner that you prescribed. But I think the issue is why. And the issue is that they want to be involved parentally, but they really don't want to be involved politically. They see that education is a very political process, and they don't want to be involved in the politics side of things. They want to be involved in school, in parental involvement. And we need to look at ways as to how we can accommodate them. But they're very hesitant about getting involved in issues of instructional unit increases and all the other things, because those are left to the educational establishment. So though I am concerned about PTA not being involved in the local governance, I do understand why, and maybe we need to take a look at those things that politicize the process to the degree that parents don't want to be involved in it. They want to elevate themselves above that. So I think that's something that we need to talk about as part of the systemic change. I'd like to also talk to you about the acquisition of tenure. A number of proposals are out there, and you've heard some of the things that that Claudia Douglas has had to say, and we share some of those concerns. But when we talk about tenure, I'd like to talk about some of the standards that we set for tenure. Now, as prescribed under AS 1420-175, there are four reasons that you can non-retain, and they are incompetence, immorality, substantial non-compliance, and a reduction in enrollment. Now, under that scenario, I want to say that I appreciate the language of deficient performance. I think we need to keep that language out in front of us, and here's why. Incompetence is more than enough reason to remove someone. But if the scale were incompetence and excellence, and incompetence being the standard by which you remove someone from the classroom, what do you do about substandard or average or below average? Those aren't incompetent. So issues of deficiency with structures to assist those people to improve their quality and profession in teaching, I think there's merit there. I think there's great merit there, because the standard right now for removal from the classroom is incompetence, and incompetence is not good enough for our kids. It's just not good enough. If you're below average, you should be able to make some moves. Now, and I'm glad you said that Terry was here, because as I read the some of the concerns with deficient performance, I'd like to know what that language means as you juxtapose it with AS 1420-175 that says incompetence is grounds. Is there a delineation in that definition of incompetent performance for actions of tenure? And how does that relate to incompetence as encased in 1420-175? I would raise that as a question. I think that overall, when we talk about the bill and the inclusion of committees and the public's access, we are talking about money. We are talking about change. So I think all of this is relevant in the big discussion. The question has to be, how much cost can we absorb? How much change is in the best interest of the quality of education for our kids? It's time that we look at our educational system and examine the things that are important to us in our kids' education, and those things maybe we can no longer afford to provide economically. The system has evolved through a process of oil money. We've been able to do a number of things that we could afford to do. We can't afford to do a lot of these things into the future, so in that context, I ask you to examine the future of Alaska education in terms of what is it we're trying to accomplish, what kind of structure can we design that helps us get there, and how do we fund it in perpetuity. And the issue of permanent fund dollars being set aside to fund education in perpetuity does two things. It isolates education as a high priority, and number two, it relieves the strain on the general fund for the rest of government. So I know you've heard some of these discussions before, but as we look into the future, nobody's talking about any of these things. So with that, I think I've already given testimony on this bill in the past, but I would like some clarification from someone in terms of what does deficient performance mean as opposed to incompetence under AS 20175.
Well, as the original, I can't say the original offer. Remember, this is a distillation of a bill that originally came from the governor. And it's a variation on the theme that the governor had written as far as tenure review and the tenure review committee. I chose the word deficiency with the idea in mind that it would be a community standard, with the idea in mind that there was local flexibility. What is deficient teacher performance in one city may not be deficient teacher performance in another. Having heard your support for that, unfortunately, I have to tell you that I am now leaning toward taking the word deficiency out and replacing it with incompetency, because that definition is in statute, because it is a statewide, very clear definition, and would remove some of that, while theoretically I philosophically support the local flexibility on reflection. I think that it will make life difficult for people in the teaching profession and may lead to a continuation of the discussion in courts. And I certainly don't want to do that.
If I can respond, I appreciate the concern raised by deficient performance, and I think I've stated the reasons why. I think that the current acceptable definition of incompetence is inadequate for what we need to ensure quality in our classrooms. I appreciate you bringing this up because I knew it would come to this. At some point in time, somebody would ask the difference between deficient performance and incompetence. I would ask you to hold that standard of deficiency, but you know you're going to do what you got to do. And if you're going to remove that, then I want to strike my deal from the record. I'm just joking. But those are my views, and I think you're going to have to wrestle with this one for a while to come up with a sufficient standard.
Well, appreciate again your contribution, and let me see if we have questions from our learned body here. All right, thank you. Is there other public testimony at this time for House Bill 84U? Well, let's. I'd like to close public testimony then, and we will continue to work on the charge as Carl gave us that it will take some work. To begin with, I would like to amend the version U to reflect reality and remove Section 1. I'm having to begrudgingly admit that this is no longer the Alaska 2000 bill that began a year ago. It is a fraction and has become, I will still maintain it, it is an attempt to implement some of the Alaska 2000 requests that came originally from the governor, basically the tuition revision and the grant proposal that's still there. And I would like to open to discussion for the committee that notion of incompetence versus deficient performance and on the wisdom here. Representative Veazey, Van Olbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, if we're going to set our standards at some low level, then that is the finished product that we can expect to get. I don't think that deficiency is a high enough standard. I would say mediocre or even just substandard performance should be grounds for dismissal or loss in terms of tenure.
The response if I might, I'm not sure that I would agree that everybody would sink to the lowest common denominator.
I didn't try to imply that everybody would sink to the lowest common denominator. What I'm saying is, if your goal is excellence, you have to set high standards, and mediocrity may not be good enough to meet that standard. And certainly, deficient is not good enough to meet that standard.
I think I understand the point you're making. Cynthia, Representative Toohey, I assume you'd like to make a motion to delete Section 1 so where we can move along.
So moved.
Any objection? Hearing no objections, Section 1 is deleted, and now we're continuing our discussion of incompetent versus deficient. And might I ask Terry Kramer, do you have at your fingertips the statutory definition of incompetence?
There isn't a definition, but it is explained in the statute that Mr. Rose referred to, 14-2175.
Would you like to join us with the microphone? And just officially identify yourself.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Terry Kramer from Legislative Legal Services. I'm the drafter of the tenure parts of House Bill 84, which are the parts, I gather, that you wanted spoken to.
Mm-hmm.
14.20.175 in the statutes lists the reasons that a tenured teacher may be non-retained. Incompetency, and then the statute goes on to say, which is defined as the inability or the unintentional or intentional failure to perform the teacher's customary teaching duties in a satisfactory manner.
In my perspective, that is below average performance. Surely. The enforcement of that definition lies with interpretation and school administration, and maybe that's where we began to fall apart. But again, maybe I look at it differently. Representative Olberg.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a revolutionary idea here that the educational establishment will probably just swoon over. It's called grading. What's so complicated about having a single form to be used statewide to grade teachers' performance that has numerical values, and if you get 51 or above, you're retained, and if you get 49 or below or 50 or below, you're non-retained? I mean, what's wrong with that idea? We can't define incompetence. We can't define substandard. That was a non-definition. That doesn't define anything. We can't define anything. But we can at least find a number and design a form. I've had performance reviews at any number of employers where, there was a subjective way to determine whether you were a competent employee or not, and it had a number attached to it. What's so revolutionary? A little humor there. Why we grade, every kid gets a grade every time they turn around, and why can't we apply the same standards to teachers?
Are you asking me the question?
I'm asking anybody.
Well, I'd like to see the form that we would use for, say, a special ed multi-handicap teacher, the teacher not handicapped, but the teaching of multiply handicapped children, and a gifted advanced honors English program.
The standards could, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, does this person show up on time? Does this person know their, what do you use to judge tenure now? All I'm suggesting is that we take the standards we use now and attach numbers to them so we have a quantifiable way to see somebody, whether somebody is a competent teacher or not. And I don't think it makes any difference what you teach. The standards should be the same for the teacher of vocational agriculture in high school as it is for a kindergarten teacher. You know your subject.
Well, someone pointed out to me once when I was teaching in special ed that they really enjoyed teaching special ed because if their children learned to tie their shoe, the teacher was a success.
Mm-hmm.
Where the honors English class, maybe they have to become a legislator before you know you're a success or not.
Mm-hmm. The standards are still the same. And they're quantifiable, they're measurable.
Well, it's
this is not rocket science.
Representative Easy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just comment that I think we're perhaps getting sidetracked trying to talk about the standard, because I certainly would support an objective analysis as opposed to a subjective analysis, but that's not the issue, because whatever standard you come up with can be litigated. What we're after is an authority of a supervisor to have the tools to build the best faculty that they know how to build. And we have to grant the tools that give them the power to do that. If we make the standard that they have, the tool they have to work with, at a standard that is so low that no person would want to try to defend their actions in court, then we might as well not even give them the tool.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, aren't we saying now that if you are not incompetent, you are eligible for tenure?
Incompetent, immoral, there are four.
Any one of those.
There is a job. Assuming if all the children went away, there wouldn't be a job, and then that's cause.
That's
yes, Representative Betty Davis.
What she just read to you is what is used to remove a teacher from his job, not to guarantee tenure. So that's not true. That's not true at all. You see, the evaluation process is what decides whether a teacher is eligible to stay there and gain tenure and to continue to work. And it doesn't make any difference what you put into place. If it's not been done, you will never be able to say that the teacher actually acquired the tenure if she's not being evaluated or he's not being evaluated. And that's where the problem is. The evaluations are done in some way haphazardly and some not at all, and some might have good systems and others don't. But that's what it is. That's not what tenure is based upon. That's what you have to do to remove a teacher from the job. And they do remove many teachers from the job based upon that. And I agree that there is a problem probably with tenure, particularly in small school districts where they might not have but one or two teachers, and they might have a new teacher they want to hire who has all the qualifications that they want to bring on, and you might have another teacher that's been there for a while and might not meet the same standards, and they want to replace this one teacher with the other one, and they can't do it because there's not cause to remove them. And so maybe we should look at that. If this is that important, and I want to tell you that I appreciate the statement that you made when you said you are not against tenure. You support it. You want to strengthen it. And what I say is what we have here is not doing it, but we got bits and pieces of things that might work. It's good enough to put into a subcommittee, work on it, and try to come up with something. But I tell you, I served on the school board 8.5 years, and I have yet to have a teacher, a parent, to come to a school board meeting or talk to me personally about tenure, the removal of it. 8.5 years in the Anchorage School District, and never even had anyone to come and testify to say that. I might have had to say that there might be some teachers that they think should not be there, but it had to do with the evaluation process, not tenure. And I served on Alaska 2000, and I know the input that we got that from a variety of people, that they had some concerns about it, that maybe 3 years, what the problem was, they thought 3 years might be too short of a time, that it should probably need to be extended and some other work done on it. And so that's where we got some of the language that we had in the original bill, and then you came up with your amendment to it, and there might be some good parts to that. It's not good enough to throw all of it away, but why throw the baby away with the bathwater? If we're going to really save tenure, let's save it, and let's work on it. Though some of the amendments I read, some of those are good, but it still need to be looked at further than what we have in this. And I appreciate you taking out Section 1, because that truly is not all the reform, but this is a piece of it, what we need. And I would suggest that maybe we need to put this in subcommittee and have some people truly look at the parts and bring it back, and then let the committee look at it as a whole.
Well, I appreciate your observations. I would observe that I think there are some excellent pieces in my amendment. I'd like to get back to process again, and in an attempt to maintain freedom and flexibility for individual school boards, for us to sit here and come up with a form to fit every school board and every school district in the state, I think probably not it would be presumptuous, but I don't. It probably wouldn't be possible. But back to the idea of the process. One of the notions we're hearing is a lack of evaluation. We need, one, what is the standard we're going to evaluate to? Two, we need someone to do the evaluation. I think I've had people tell me that principals just don't get into the classrooms for lots of reasons. They're not being evaluated. Not every principal is a good principal. And I don't know that I want my career, make or break, receive tenure or not, based on what could be a personality conflict between myself and a principal. I may see the world very differently than that person. So what I'm saying is to broaden the perception, to use a very basic American idea that you're judged by a jury of your peers, to have more than one evaluator, we will come closer to the truth. We'll come closer to reality. We'll come closer to defining what is competent at the local level. I suppose it's a little bit like the 12 blind men describing an elephant. You know, collectively, they are more accurate than they are individually. That's sure. So again, we get back to the process, and I think that's one of the greatest sticking points, certainly with NEA, and that is using peer evaluation. And I'd like some input from the committee as a whole about that very basic process.
Mr. Chairman, my problem with peer evaluation is that you want teachers to evaluate teachers, and they're trained to be teachers and not evaluators. They're not administrators. They need to have the training. And besides, if you even decided to do that, it could be done at the local level. It does not have to be a mandate from the state that every school district do it. School district want to do that, they can do it now. There's nothing to keep them from doing it. But if you're going to have a team of people that's going to do the evaluation, at least put it at the level of administrative, where that's their job to do that. You do better what you do all the time. I don't think it would be fair to have teachers in the classroom for a portion of the time and all evaluating their peers another portion of the time and not doing either one of their jobs very well, because the substitute have to take over their classes, and the impact that would have on school district to have substitutes coming in, where does the money come? It have to be buffered by the school districts? Or are you willing to put the amount of money that it would take in the bill as an appropriation to make sure all school districts will be able to do it?
Well, we would disagree there that, I look at a typical elementary school in Anchorage, you'd have one or two teachers who would fall under this purview of this bill. Over an entire year's time, the evaluating team would have to observe for perhaps an hour. I don't see that it's a major impact. But more importantly, to the notion that teachers don't recognize excellence in teaching, I think it is an insult to teachers. They certainly
know. That's not what I said at all.
They're maybe not trained in evaluation, but when they see excellence in teaching, they... And conversely, I think when they see teachers who are not...
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to dominate, but did you get a copy from the Anchorage School District, the evaluation of E84, the comments that was made?
I
think it would be good, if you have not received them, that you look at those, if you do have them. They point out what they see as the pitfalls to 84, and the implications that it would have upon that school district, I think is worthy of all of us reading it, and I don't know if it was sent to everyone.
No, I don't believe I have a copy of that.
Could make copies of that, please?
Gary Davis had a comment.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Peer review seems to be something that some people have trouble with and others don't. I really don't have trouble with it in the context of a committee including, that definitely includes the principal whose job it is to evaluate. So there's no teacher that has overriding control in the committee process. So, and I don't think, in that context, I think it lessens the concern that a teacher is going to be standing alone judging their peers. So there's definitely some different philosophies between different teachers, especially a long-time tenured teacher and a newly educated teacher fresh out of school still trying to obtain tenure. There's probably a lot of differing philosophies there. So I don't, I think in the committee process it addresses any concerns that people have with peer review. If we might, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce my amendment, and in the time we have, I think it addresses.